Welcome, everyone. I am bringing on the one and only Renette Seenham, and Dolores Cahill will be joining us soon. It's been a while since we've done some of these conversations, and I really wanted to have a candid conversation about what's going on in the world and from two of the most censored women out there.
Is something happening?
So, Renette, you've been on the campaign trail, and some people might not even know that you're on the campaign trail because you're being so censored.
Yeah, people have no idea. A lot of people have no idea. Even my own town, my own paper won't report on it, which tells you the concerted effort. But yeah, I've been up and down the state of California, especially in SoCal, and
for governor
of California, giving Newsom a run for his money, and really fascinating to be on the ground. So running with no party affiliation, there's a lot of people left over from the recall that we had last September. And so there's just there's under 50 people running, but most of them aren't like really active. They've just still put their hat in the ring from the recall.
Break it down for us, Renette, because, you know, California is significant as a state. Mm-hmm. You've said this before, it sort of dictates all others. So even if people aren't living there, I think it's good for us to be aware of what's going on in California.
Well, and what specifically, because there's so much, what do you want me to, like COVID regulations, man?
The recall happened, that this ballot's up in 2 months, right? And what action, you know, you've been talking to people one-on-one, you've been putting stuff up, your Instagram came down, you've been massively censored. Clearly don't want your information. And just even, you know, like you said, people are done with the
They're with the two-party system. So what's happened is that we had a recall for Newsom last year. And all you heard for months and months and months before the recall was just, you know, Larry Elder. Oh, here she is. Hi, Dolores.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
You're great.
Yeah. And
wonderful. Renette, okay, cool.
A little
sorry for being late. I just had an issue with my microphone and stuff. Lovely to see you.
You it's too. You.
It's great to see you, Dolores.
Yeah. Oh, you're so good. Lovely to see you both. Great. How are things?
Good. I was just giving an update in California. So should I just roll with that?
Yeah, you go ahead.
Okay. So we had a recall last year. It was all about Larry Elders. It was about Caitlyn Jenner. And of course, supposedly Newsom got more votes in the recall than he did the original election, which I have a hard time believing. And so then, but people did not realize, though, was that we're talking just around the corner. Come the next June 7th, there was going to be an actual big primary election that would allow us to start the process of getting rid of Newsom and not have him for the next 4 years. So here we are 2 months out, and in the state of California, ballots are going to go out in 2 months. And nobody knows there's an election. You Google primary elections, California, you'll get the election recall last year or the one 4 years ago. So people have no idea there's actually an election. And the primary, the way that works in California is that they have what's called now open primaries, where no matter your party affiliation, you can vote for anybody, right? As far as like governor or president, you can vote for anybody, for governor. And so I could be a Republican and vote for a declined state or a Democrat or whatever. So whoever are the top two vote getters ends up, they go then into November into the general election. So it's the top two, then they'll be competing. Wow. Now, I have no doubt that at this point in time, Newsom is, I assume he's a shoo-in. He'll be making it through the primary. And so when people say to me, well, Renette, how do you compete against Newsom? I'm like, I'm actually not competing against Newsom right now. I'm competing against all the other candidates. And to be honest, there's no total media blackout on the primary. They don't want people now, when they're so disgruntled, to realize they have an opportunity to get rid of and unseat Newsom. So the media is just very quiet. What they're hoping for is that this COVID mess will pass enough time, and we have such short memories, that we will in 2 months time go, oh, what COVID, what mandates, what miserable life, and that we'll just vote for Newsom once again. I don't know if that's going to work, though, because when I'm on the ground, people are so disgruntled with the homelessness, the crime, the rise the continued fire danger, his corruption, the two-tiered system where he doesn't wear the mask, everyone else has to. What's happened to the children and the education system? People are really done with that. So I tell folks, like, look at guys, my biggest competitor is not a person. It is censorship. We just had a social media expert tell me yesterday that my social media is absolutely being throttled. And I was already banned off of Instagram. My official gubernatorial campaign site was banned and removed without warning on January 10th. And so what they said is your accounts are being throttled, while Newsom's accounts we are seeing is getting a 50% boost of being pushed out there, right? So this is what they're doing. And so I'm running with no party affiliation. And I have to tell you, when I go around talking to everybody, my team's talking to everyone, people are done. They're done with a two-party affiliation. They know big money has infiltrated it. The leaders do not represent them. They're sick and tired of it. And when they hear about this campaign, when they can hear about this campaign, they love it. It's a beautiful campaign.
It's a beautiful campaign, Renette. You guys have done such a good job.
Yeah.
So well, I want to, we specifically call this unraveling tyranny when the three of us talked a couple of weeks ago and wanted to put this out. And I, you know, I was saying, kind of joking, but it's really true. I think you're the two most censored women out there. And this tyranny, like, you know, you talked about people maybe forgetting what's happened with COVID, and we have a new distraction that's hit the scene. So it's like whatever propaganda they can use to distract people. And Dolores, I love having your perspective, because so many of the people that we're in conversations with are here in the States, and we have a very limited perspective, but you have that kind of global on the ground, what's happening there. So I'd love to hear from you what your perspective is with what's going on in the world from that vantage point.
Well, I had a phone call from Craig Kelly today, and he's running for election in Australia. I don't know if you've known of him, but he's already elected there. And he's been supported by, I think, Clive Palmer, who's given him $100 million.
Oh!
And he set up a new party four months ago. So he and I have been in touch from the beginning. But he has got 82,000 members now of his new political party, and they have to have elections by the end of May, I think, 2022 in Australia. And they already have got selections for every constituency, I think around 150 constituencies.
Right. It's exploding.
They are also hugely censored, Renette. So I was thinking I would love to have maybe you and Craig on closer to both of your elections, right? But they are hugely censored.
Yeah.
So I think as a perspective, I think, you know, I think Bill Gates had some interview to say I should be taken off Facebook, and I was taken off in December pretty much overnight. And I had, I think in about 3 months, they stopped me getting new followers in March 2021. But I'd only really gone on social media in November, you know, just before that. So about 3 months. And I had 6 times more followers than the president of Ireland and 7 times more followers than all the political parties put together in 3 months, right? Which was great. And then, of course, I didn't get one more. And I think the Institute of Strategic Dialogue in the world had a survey of the medical sources of misinformation in the world. And number three is Dr. Vernon Coleman from the UK, who is very popular and gives huge information, and an author, and had videos. And then the second was Senator Dr. Scott Jensen in the States as the second source of medical misinformation. And I am the number one source of medical misinformation in the world, which I'm very proud of.
Hey, Dolores.
Yeah. So I think, of course, just like here in Ireland and across the world, you know, it was always planned that in spring 2022, that they knew that people would be psychologically exhausted, you know, and also they would probably have coerced and manipulated whatever proportion of the population that they were going to. Mm-hmm. And so then the other phases of this, of course, as we know, are in, you know, banking and hyperinflation and, you know, food shortages and then war like we see. So in a way, I think, Renette, what we see here is that once people wake up to the media distraction, they can see it. And so why they're censoring, and Craig Kelly is hugely censored as well, as you are, Renette, as I am. But what I think, I am actually very hopeful now, because I was at like community meetings now that I'm invited to with over 100 people, we'll say, you know, small ones, but they are making the connection between the education system, the health system, the media, the political system. And I give my little speeches. But I do say, which doesn't go down well as yet, even in the awake aware community about that we have to stand for election locally on our school boards, in our communities, on our councils. And that is the solution. So it's quite similar, I think, what's going on all around the world.
Yeah. And one thing I think people don't really know about you, Dolores, because, you know, you're this medical expert that's been giving all this misinformation, but you have an extensive background. You've run for office, and you actually, out of all the people that I've spoken to, you have a really great understanding of this system. And I think it's, you know, and Renette, you being like in government, it's a perspective that, because we've been talking to so many of the doctors and about what's going on, it's been really heavy on that. But I think that we have to look at the system that has to change, the old one that's going out and the new one that's going in. So how do we navigate through that, Dolores? Like, because right now, I don't know how much you're publicly sharing about your situation, so I don't want to say anything. But you, I know you.
Well, I have warrants out for my arrest since August 2021. And they were originally in the UK, as people know. So that trial, I've never seen a summons, right? So under the law, you're innocent until you're proven guilty. Mm-hmm. And if they are going to say that you have committed a crime, someone has got to, you know, give you the summons, like hand it to you personally. So that's never happened to me. So there's been a couple of trials. So I think I'm one of the few convicted in the United Kingdom. So I never got a summons or saw the warrant, but the crime was for meeting 30 people outdoors. And so I had paid for the screens, you know, for Trafalgar Square. There was many of us doctors and nurses. So the rationale was, even though there was only a small number of us in the countries in May 2020, when I was on a phone call with Kate Shimarani, the nurse, mm-hmm. That we realized she was, you know, we were both quite surprised. There was only a few nurses and doctors. So together we came up with the idea, if we could get from multiple countries, then we would support each other. And that's the World Doctors Alliance came out of the Trafalgar Square initiative. But I had actually paid for the screens in a way to be, you know, one of the organizers in the event that they decided to. Someone had to, right? And also we had got funding for that. But the funding agency that we had used, we just put in the invoices and then we got enough money that we'd actually spent. But at 12 o'clock that day, they gave back the money to everyone who had donated, and it had come to about £15,000 between about six of us. So we didn't get a penny even for all the money that we'd spent. But then anyway, I only found out in the newspaper that they had issued a summons, but they had sent it to a P.O. box of a political party I was no longer a member of. They had three trials in the United Kingdom that I didn't know about. And then when I was in a conference in Budapest in Hungary, on the newspapers worldwide, it was that there was an arrest warrant out for me for not appearing at trials that I knew nothing about. And the first one, I think it was 2 years in prison for organizing a meeting outdoors of more than six people. Oh. And when we did the second one, it was more than 10 years, or 10 years in prison and a 10,000 fine. So that was the trial that went ahead in November of 2021, and they fined me. So I'm dealing with that in the law, but the trial took place and I have a conviction for meeting with 30 people as a breach of SARS-CoV-2.
And you're representing yourself.
Begs the question, you know, has SARS-CoV-2 been isolated, and is it due process if you don't see a summons or a warrant? And then in Ireland, in November, around the same time, I didn't get served a summons, but they said that they had a trial in January of 2022 around not filling in a passenger locator form in Dublin Airport coming from Edinburgh and a couple of other locations. So that is potentially up to 2 years in prison. And then I had communicated with the court. But on the 24th of January, the judge on the criminal court in Dublin issued a warrant for my arrest for non-appearance, even though we were communicating with them. So, and then I've been in a number of situations when I've been in my home country and used a credit card, we'll say, and the police have come. Now, it could be not connected, or it could be, you know, may not be. So I'm not in my home at the minute.
Well, we're always thinking about you, Dolores, and sending
thank you
lots of prayers and gratitude your way for standing up and speaking truth. I mean, the fact that you're going through all of that and the attitude that you have always amazes me, but also the fact that you even understand all of this and are representing yourself. I mean, like most people would be paralyzed with the fact that all of this was coming at them, but the fact that you... Well,
and maybe, Imani, what it is really it's precedence cases, right? Around freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, right? To talk to people outside medical information. And the other one is around freedom of travel. So these are fundamental inalienable rights that can't be taken away. And also then the ability to be innocent until proven guilty. And also to, you know, be aware that trials are happening. So what we kind of see in the globalists, and that's why it's great to, for people all around the world to know that, like, very simply in the rule of law, you have freedom of speech, freedom of travel, and they can't be taken away. And innocent until proven guilty, and to be informed that a trial is taking place. So what we have is the police and the court system not upholding the law. So partly why I'm really honored to be, you know, in the situation in a way, because for 2 years I've been trying to encourage other people to take precedence cases. So now it's, in a way, you know, almost, you know, something that in a way you wouldn't wish to be in the situation. But on the other hand, if someone has got to take precedence cases around the world, and the way it works in justice is, especially in the 57 so-called Commonwealth, or, you know, which are based in, we'll say, the law that has come out of England and also out of Ireland, is that if you have one precedence case, that will be a precedence case for at least 57 countries, if not the world.
That's powerful.
I'm very honored to be involved in presenting myself to the courts.
Well, you're the best candidate for that one, I have to say.
Thank you.
And you seem to know the law and the Constitution better than anybody, actually.
I was just going to say to you, Renette, I mean, the fact, the way that, and I wonder if it is a cultural thing, if it's unique to you being there, or if somehow in the States, we have definitely have lost a connection to an understanding of some of those basic human rights. And I know you had shared with me on a previous live we did just the history of Ireland. And I feel like sometimes in the States, we're not so close to home to things. And we have this feeling around us that it can't happen to us. And we're, you know, obviously starting to see what's happening in California. So we see things crumbling, but it's still not firsthand to a lot of people in the States. We saw what was just happening with Canada. And, you know, people were definitely mobilizing around that. And I know Lee was involved with organizing the truckers. But Renette, what's your thought on why? Do you think there's a kind of a lack of information or connection to this knowledge that we seem to have in this country?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that our you know, we've talked about this in the past, that our public, you know, education system was designed for two clear goals, which was first to remove any possibility ever of dissent, right, from working Americans, and to also remove any originality. And that was generations ago, and here we are today. So most people have no idea what their Constitution is about. I know a lot of people have these really beautiful, lovely, expressive lives, and yet they'll sit there and they'll bash the Constitution. And it's like, do you realize that you have this really beautiful, expressive, free life because of the Constitution? And people don't know that. And even now we've removed cursive writing, right, lessons, so that children can't even read the Constitution because they can't read cursive. They can't even read their grandparents' letters, right? It's like, it's Greek to them. So there's definitely been a dismantling of our understanding of our rights, of the Constitution, of our history, the history that we are being told. And even now we have schools and colleges and universities teaching these young people that the Constitution was written by these old white privileged men. It's like, wait a second. Yeah, these white men wrote the Constitution, but you have to back up a little bit more. It was the Six Nations of the Iroquois Confederacy that inspired our forefathers. They're not telling the young people this. They're not telling that our Constitution was inspired by the indigenous people of Turtle Island. And so it is so manipulated. It is so wrong. And it is deceptive. And it is meant to meant to deceive us in believing that the Constitution is outdated. It doesn't serve us. It's for the privileged. And people have absolutely no idea. And here we are today. Now, the good news is this. I have never in my life seen so many people going off and learning about the Constitution, taking classes, taking courses, giving workshops, you know, actually going out there and stating the Constitution, saying, these are my God-given inalienable rights. How dare you? This is brand new, really. So this is what, this is the beautiful side effect of COVID and this global tyranny that we're all under right now.
Yeah, I'm seeing that as well. And I wonder, and I have been concerned because I think the youth are being targeted to have a, you know, despise that history and that the Constitution. And Dolores, is that something of the young people? What's the awareness of the young people of Ireland and there in Europe? That would you say that there's a similar kind of response to that, or is it different there?
So I think that's excellent. You know, that's a very good perspective, but really it's all around the world. So it has come really, what's happening now, it's come really from Marxism, you know, and through the Frankfurt School in Germany in the past hundreds of years, and then into Columbia University, and then throughout the entire education system, particularly in the English speaking world, right? That they are absolutely undermining our education system from the very, you know, from 4 years old until whatever, and all this under Agenda 21 system where people have continuous education. It's so that they are essentially, it's a form of propaganda. And the way they're working is they tell you something that is entirely wrong. And I, you know, learned about this when I was doing science in 30 years ago. Mm. And the rationale for that is that if you don't understand fundamentally science or engineering or mathematics or history or the law, they know cognitively, if you want to look into it yourself when you're older or talk with people from another generation, that if it's the exact opposite of what you've been taught, you will never accept it. They actually go to being angry. So there's actually, they're also in a way inculcated now in the universities that any kind of discussion is equivalent to hating people, right? And that's why they came up with words like, I feel threatened when you have a debate. And this is literally coming from Marxism as a, you know, and socialism. But now, left and right really means nothing anymore because in essentially they are more common with each other. Yeah. So I do feel sorry for people, you know, that are under 30, we'll say, because really instead of an education system all around the world, particularly the English speaking, is that they have been, you know, taught things that are absolutely untrue. And they are so untrue that they will find it hard to be innovators because they have no fundamental understanding of science and things. And so what I say is that our generation over 30, right, have to kind of live a long time. You know, we have to get our acting gear to live a long time because we have to not only build the education system so that those born from 2022 onwards, at least a proportion, will be taught the right thing. But when you know, in 40 years' time, there will be an educated group, hopefully, of people, you know, that are younger, but the people who will be in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s will actually be potentially lost and not be able to really understand the world. And what they want to do is that the next generation for hundreds of years, that we'll actually lose the fundamental pillars of the fabric of our society and how things work well and how you innovate and proper history.
You know, Dolores, my book is being re-released, The Absence, Presence of Soil, and I appreciate both of your support and endorsement of that.
Well,
but I cover a lot on the educational system, but I hadn't put together that piece of like the number of years that it takes for that to cycle through. And I think about, you know, the children today and so many more families that are homeschooling and starting to teach that. But, you know, it is really hard to reprogram something that's been programmed. And no matter what how we try to undo it, I've worked with a lot of children. I have my master's in early childhood education. I've worked with traumatized children. I'm sure both of you experienced too. Once you have that kind of imprint, it's so difficult to change it. And that programming in the school, even if parents are pulling their children out, we have to do so much to unschool them or deprogram them. And so,
yeah.
That's a real.
And you know, John Taylor Gatto is a brilliant. He was an award-winning teacher, and then he was fired when they realized he was teaching 14-year-olds about innovation and they can do anything in the world and be innovative. And he was having huge success, and he was fired. And he's really sadly died years ago.
New York City New York City Teacher of the Year 8 times. We actually hosted him in Connecticut when my children were in diapers. So he was one of my big mentors and one of the main reasons I actually decided to homeschool. So I love that you brought his name into the conversation. Great, you know, whole book on really breaking down education as it as a New York school teacher of the year. That was
right.
Yeah. Brilliant. So curious what you both feel. We've had so many pivots in what is happening in the world. You know, COVID is not gone, but seems like it's taken a backseat.
A convenient midterm election break.
Yeah. So what do you think is going on? Like, just let's just talk candidly about, you know, what was happening in Canada and now the focus on the Ukraine.
Do you want to go first?
No, Renette, you go first.
I think all of a sudden we're realizing and we're seeing now, it's come to the surface about the whole, you know, World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and the Davos group and so on, and how they have these global young leaders. And now we see there's all these tentacles everywhere, right?
Everywhere.
And there's a big play. And so what's happened is people are waking up. They're realizing that COVID is a scam. Not that people didn't get sick and die, but it's not what we thought it was. It's not what we were told it was, you know. And as Dolores has said many times, it's not been isolated. So now people are waking up to that. And then, of course, there's all these draconian measures. And, of course, this you know, jab passport enforcing this ID, this digital ID. Right now in Australia, I don't know if you've seen, but they're actually removing ATMs. They're removing them. You can't even get access to your cash. So this is what they're trying to do. So it's all the art of war, right? It's destroying the fabric of society from the inside out with ever having tanks or firing a shot. And this is what we've been saying since the get go. And so none of this is a surprise. So now we have the narrative of COVID breaking down. We have people pushing back because they're catching on. We have this incredible truck convoy that showed up saying, showing everyone, you're not alone. There's thousands, millions of us who feel the same way. Now they're kind of retreating, but they never retreat and just go away. You know, they're retreating. It's like the boat constrictor. You kind of let up, you know, like this and that, and then that's how it works. So they're letting up right now, but, you know, it's one of those things where they're going to go like this after the midterms. And once they get their election results, they're going to do this again. And so it is very clear that they're doing everything they can now to break down the supply chain. They started that with the cargo ships on the coast, on the west coast of America. Now they're doing it on the east coast. Yeah. Now, of course, even with the truckers, that helps break it down a little bit more, too. But the thing is that really what they're trying to do is also raise the price of gas and fuels, where people can't even afford to drive to work. They can't afford to heat their homes, to cook the food. And this is to get us so compromised that when we're in such a point of breakdown, that when all is left and there's no cash or the dollar's lost its value, they'll be like, here you go. You know, we've got your salvation. It's this digital form ID that comes, basically it's all digitized. Everything's online. You've got a code, no more cash. And that's your future, or you don't have a future at all. That is what they're pushing for sure. No doubt. I mean, they admit it. They talk openly. It's not a theory.
You'll eat cardboard and insects, and that you'll be happy about it.
Yeah, you'll own nothing. You'll eat insects. You'll eat cardboard. And we will own you, and you will be happy.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. You'll own nothing and you'll be so happy.
You'll own nothing and we're going to own you. If you're going to have anything, it's going to be coming through us. So you'll do exactly as we'll say. And they're going to do the social credit system that comes from China. They already started to install that in Canada. And they really want that here as well. And so they've kind of got us all used to that idea and that concept. And people are like, what could possibly go wrong? I'm like, well, okay.
Everything. Yeah. And I actually really wanted to have this conversation to sort of expose it, because even people that are aware of the scam around what's happening with COVID, we so easily get hooked into these emotional propaganda that they're putting out there. And it's really hard. You know, we have to do this like self-check thing of like, where is this showing up and how many different platforms? I think you said that when we were talking earlier, like, where are you seeing it?
You know, this is a rule of thumb, folks. When simultaneously every news agency, whether it's, you know, the television, the radio and the newspapers and the magazines and the Hollywood actors and the influencers, right, and the evening, the nighttime comedians, they all instantaneously had the exact same message and are exactly on board. That is your clear, clear cue that you are being propagandized against. It is one big, bold lie, and you need to lift the covers and start looking underneath the beast of that belly to see and look for the truth. That is your cue. When you see all of them at the same time sitting there going, oh, put your mask on. Oh, do this. Oh, BLM. Oh, now it's Ukraine. That tells you 100% it's not true. That's it. That's all you need to know. Now go do your research.
Exactly. Dolores, what's your take?
I think Renette has said it beautifully. I think what someone gave me the analogy now, I didn't make it up, but what they said is, you know, for say half of the population or half of our families or whatever that are not aware, it's like if you know, it could have been you, Renette, now told me this, if you know your loved one is having an affair, right? Everyone is telling you, but you know that if you make the phone call to really ask, that your whole world will change. Mm-hmm. So the psychological thing that's going on is that I think everybody now knows in their gut, we'll say, you know, there's something hugely wrong. But there's, whether it's 50% or 70% in our countries that are so afraid in a way to even look under the hood at all because they know that their world will change. And I think the propagandizing that they've done against us as individuals or one-tenth of the population, they're afraid, well, if they look into it, they are going to have to admit maybe that they were wrong. They maybe shouldn't have taken the injection. That people that they challenged or whatever were actually right, but also that if it is true that the media, the government, the health system, and then a whole lot of other systems like the education system, the system of justice, courts, police, are all working in cahoots against us as a society to undermine us, bankrupt us essentially, and make it very difficult to function in society, that is something that some of them actually would nearly prefer to go, you know, whatever it's 10 or 20 years to go to their graves without actually looking under the hood. So I think what the solutions to all this is and what we're all doing is building, making it easier for them to transition. Because if you can find food that's nutritious and that even culturally, and we have festivals, you know, and show people, there's really nothing to be afraid. And then food security is very important. Teach people how to grow food, very practical stuff. That then it doesn't really matter if there's hyperinflation. If you have a network in your community of people that grow food and that you learn that getting nutritious food, you don't need as much and it can actually be quite cheap. And then people lose the fear. So I think everything you're both saying is true, but I think it's actually easier. We have to make it even more easy for people to face what's going on.
Right. You know, I mean, you're right. I think people do have that gut feeling that, you know, they're sensing they're on the sinking Titanic. They know their ship is sinking. Right. But they're not going to jump ship. They're not unless they see a dinghy, a life raft to jump into. That's where we come in. We're the life raft. And you don't sit there and say, hey, what's your opinion on something? You just say, just jump, join us. And that's what we have to do, because if we're going to think that we're going to convince people, this is what we're going to experience. We're going to experience this. But if we just create the reality, you know, to get beyond this, to move through this, it's a beautiful reality. It's community, it's communing, it's food, it's farming, it's gardening, it's, you know, it's intergenerational connections, it's face-to-face connections, not just, you know, having a, you know, middleman or a screen between us. That's appealing. And then they can just kind of just come over to our side. And we don't have to sit there and debate and say, oh, you're wrong or I'm right. Or that. We don't have to do any of that. So, and that's what Buckminster Fuller always spoke to, right?
Yes.
Is just, you know, making a whole new reality, making the old one obsolete, which I totally paraphrased. And and that's what we have to do. That's our job. And so that's what we're working towards. That's why me campaigning for governor in California, it's very much based upon that principle, the seven generation principle. Every decision you make today should serve seven generations from now, as well as really utilizing healing and restoration as the backbone for our economy, and using, you know, gardens, community gardens in the neighborhoods, in the schools, in the nurseries, as a tool, as a mechanism for people to come together, conjugate without having to have a political debate, and really focus on the plants, what you're growing, right? And then harvesting, then sitting down and communing at the table, breaking bread, right? And enjoying the bounty of your labor and start the healing process. And that might sound, you know, kind of pie in the sky, but the truth of the matter is I've been doing it here as a city council member and a mayor and on the, you know, on the ground for years. So, and it does work. I know it. I've got that experience.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to know what's going on in the world, but also know that we're building out that new timeline or this positive future, and to really get that message across to the younger people that, that they're, I love that metaphor of, you know, we've got to give them something to jump to, and you don't have to even, it doesn't even have to be whether you were right or wrong. At some point, we just need to create as many of those life rafts as possible. We're doing that at Haven Earth with teaching people how to build their own hemp homes and regenerative agriculture. And Renette, you're doing it on the ground and telling people with your campaign that speaks to all of this. And Dolores, you've been doing it through everything that you do around, and I know we spoke before about nutrition. And for me, having owned an organic cafe, and the reason I homeschooled my children was to raise them in, with that kind of food awareness, is such a big part of it. If we can give people nourishment on all levels, but understanding that when we nourish our bodies, we, and we come together in this way, we're nourishing so much more, that, you know, it's not to not be aware of what's going on. It's actually to be aware of it, so you don't buy into it and feed into it or plug into it energetically. We need to actually disconnect from that, be aware, but also be working towards these other, what I call sovereign solutions that are going to ensure freedom for the future generations. Renette, what your website for your campaign? Because I know it's been taken down and censored. Where can I put your?
Yeah, so it's elect, E-L-E-C-T, elect Renette, R-E-I-N-E-T-T-E. You should see it right down there, electrenette.com. And if you want to, I suggest going there on the homepage. You can see where you can sign up and get little newsletters. And I am on Instagram, Renette Senham 2.0, because 1.0 was removed. And I'm on Facebook, but not, you know, they have in Facebook prison, of course. They're like, oh, sorry, we're going to take all your posts and put them in the bottom of the feed. I'm like, well, that's the first time you've ever done that, actually. And I've been more mellow now than I have in years. So, you know, and I tell them really the most important thing is word of mouth. For those of you who are in Ireland, Australia, anywhere else in the United States, anyone you know in California, you've got to tell them about me. This is actually, we have to circumvent the censorship. And we actually have to tell people, like, look, there's this person, nonpartisan, 20 years, city council member, mayor, grassroots, in the trenches, calls out, you know, corruption for over and over and over again. And let them know about Renette Senham running for governor, because once people hear this campaign and it's about the children, the seven generation, you know, principle and healing and restoration, they're on board. I mean, it's just, I've been so thrilled, but they're on board because it resonates with them. It's like, and they've been asking, that we just want a solution. We don't care about the parties anymore. We want somebody who has solutions. So for those of you out there, every chance you have, bring up, you know, Renette Senham running for California governor and spread the word everywhere, whether you're in a gas station or a grocery store or online. You know, that's the best thing we can do.
Wake the bear.
Wake the bear, baby.
Dolores, what's the best way for people to keep up with you that you're basically can't?
So we have, I'm also promoting elect Renette as well. And I just want to say, Renette, that I think if you also say you're going to run the next time, right? And I'm definitely going to run, even though I have used censorship, right? In a way that we just have to learn. And I think your campaign is magical. And I think I'm going to, if it's okay, run on a similar platform or encompass a lot of the things that you're doing. So I think as well, I definitely as well, Renette, want to interview you with Craig Kelly as well, right? Because he is inspiring. I don't know if you know him.
I do know. I do. Actually, I have some interview. When she told me about he had the party, I was like, oh, of course. Yeah. It's the party's exploded in numbers. It's just like unheard of. It's historic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has 82,000 members. But what I'm saying as well is that if people are, you know, because sometimes if you're in a party, there can be, you know, things can, you know, you have to be accountable for what everyone says. So maybe in the transition, we could have independent people running for councils, local governments, and for more senior election positions, but even as independents in a way in the transition, because then it's less easy for the globalists. But I think what I'm going to do as well is keep running for election. And if you are as well, that people can say, well, even if you don't get elected this time, that you will run again, and that the people who are built up behind you, and if we can all around the world help each other.
Right.
And, you know, I think that would be wonderful, because really what we're trying to do is have a better world. And the people who've really rocked up and sacrificed a lot in the last 2 or 3 years, that once people realize it, they need support on an ongoing basis. So, right. So for me, we're setting up, well, there's ProfessorDolorescahill.com. A lot of my websites have been taken down, even by Shopify and GoDaddy, right? Wow. Just where they're just normal ones with like videos of what I'm doing. But we still have up is custodian.com. So C-U-S-T-O-D-E-A-N.com. And I am trying to build networks around Ireland of community groups and people who know about how to do food or detoxify or banking, you know, or understanding the system of accountability and the law, that are willing to help other groups start, because it can be a little daunting if you don't know that many people and you want to do it. So we're trying to build networks.
Good.
Just because of the issues I have with arrest warrants, I am a little bit curtailed on custodian. But my radio show, Dolores Cahill show on TNTradio.live every Saturday, the podcasts of that are up on custodian.com as well. Good. And we are working behind the scenes. But the last thing I think for people to give hope is that a lot of what's going on has actually been criminal and unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are not saying it. You know what I mean? I'm just like, people are not calling it out that if you as a company manufacture a PCR test and that product is inaccurate, there should be a product recall, right? The same as these injections are products. Right, whether they're in a clinical trial, which they are. But if you had a car where, 10 people died or one person died, that product would be withdrawn, right? So we have, you know, between the United States, the UK and the EU, there are 65,000 people that have died from these products. And so then we have to turn the spotlight on the regulators who are not, you know, allowing these products to be used. And then the police are not investigating, you know, death and harm, and the coroners, you know, and the pathologists, and the court system, right? So even though it seems like it's a big thing, all we need around the world is one or two people whose loved one has died, or a pregnant mother whose unborn baby died, you know, because of these injections. So I think what this is a phase of, when they're now pulling back a little bit of COVID-19, is for us to focus on holding who procured in the civil service these tests when they were known to be inaccurate, you know, and that we can actually hold individual people to account. And that will resonate for the years to come. So, and that's what we're doing in custodian, is teaching people a little bit about the law, because once, you know, every doctor is not, there is no immunity against prosecution, right? So that's, partly they're repeating things that are entirely incorrect. So, and then people, once they realize that police who have broken the law, you know, by intimidating or using political policing to try and put us in prison, even though we haven't actually broken any laws, whereas people injecting people that have caused harm and death are not been, that once we will eventually, right, hold individual people accountable. And then there is liability, right? Those individual doctors or police are liable under the law. And once they start seeing that a policeman who doesn't investigate a death of an elderly person in a care home will actually be prosecuted, even civilly, for not doing his job, and someone would make a claim of 100,000 and that goes to court, then suddenly the entire globalist system falls apart. And also the journalists not informing people of health information and causing harm is actually a crime against humanity, as well as misinformation. So I think that I just, you know, really want to give people hope that this whole thing literally is emperor has no clothes and can fall apart quite quickly once we hold one civil service or one policeman or one doctor to account.
Right.
So just holding the point. And like you said, Dolores, what you're doing in being that example, the same thing is going to kind of happen in reverse, that we just, once we get to that point, it starts to topple and everything is going to start to deconstruct and quite quickly.
It will be a house of cards for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's gotten so bad here that, you know, the press has been complicit for sure, the media, but, you know, it used to be in the past where on like our local hometown newspaper, you could see an article, read the article, and it wasn't just bad reporting, it was misreporting, it was propaganda. It was character assassination. It was like really attempt to undermine people in the community. But you could always kind of still get a breadth of the story, an idea of the real story by reading the comments, right? And you could actually, these are people who are like engaged on the front lines, actually there, involved, and they'd actually give you a whole different story. Well, now, how it's been since COVID, they're now completely censoring and deleting and deactivating the comments within our local newspapers. And even YouTube, you can no longer do a little thumbs down. You can only do a thumbs up, right? So they're actually going out there, and it's not just now the actual articles, the pieces, the reporting, but they're even going after the comments, because the comments is where you could actually still see some of the truth. And now they're going after that.
I did try to put up your website, Dolores Cahill, and it didn't let me post on one of the YouTube channels. And I've been banned on YouTube for 2 years, so I can't post. But this is one of the ones that we used through. So every other comment went through except the one with Dolores's name. They didn't, can't post that
one. I'm so proud.
I've been texting my electronet.com. She's like, Renette, I'm texting all day. I go to text your website and it won't go. It won't text. I got it this morning.
Yeah.
We should be so proud, really.
I'm so proud of both of you. And it's just been such an honor and privilege to get to know you, like obviously sharing these conversations with the world, but behind the scenes, you're definitely two of my favorite people and friends that, I hold dear to my heart. So I'm sending both of you white light and prayers of protection constantly. And just really grateful for this conversation. I think it's going to open some eyes with people whose eyes are already open. I'm like,
So, Amani, for 2 years, you've been really promoting us and helping facilitate that we're all networked with each other and behind the scenes. And we're very, very grateful for all you do.
I know. Really grateful. Thank you.
Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone. There's more to come. This was a really sweet and important conversation. So love you both, and lots of love to everyone that's tuning in.
Love you guys so much.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.